2 years ago this week, a Marine Corps Brigadier General was working in his stateroom on a communication ship cruising on station in the South China Sea. Suddenly, a rear admiral walked in with a decoded terse message. Its bold cap letters read, "Close Da Nang, land the landing force." A day later, on March 8, 1965, America's first combat unit bucked through an infernally high surf and populated a strip of sand which would become known as Red Beach 2. Red Beach 2 was about 10 miles west of Da Nang Airfield. The 9th Marine Expeditionary Brigade had landed. On this, the second anniversary of the first American Forces unit landing in Vietnam, we salute the men who were responsible for pulling off one of the most efficient landing force operations in Marine history. Only a single battalion landing team went ashore on March 8th. It was the 3rd Battalion, 9th Marines. A special landing force of the 3rd Marine Division, which had been afloat in the South China Sea for nearly 2 months. The other half of the historic 9th Marine Expeditionary Brigade ground force was carried off by another battalion of the 3rd Marine Division. It was the 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines, which had been on airlift alert at Okinawa for just such a contingency. Marine Unit 1-3 began touchdown at the Da Nang airstrip the next day, March 9th. The beginning of the final phase of the Marine Expeditionary Landing. The man who received that execute message aboard the communication ship USS Mount McKinley 2 years ago was Brigadier General Frederick J. Karsh, presently serving at Marine Corps Schools as Director of the Command and Staff College. General Karsh remembers receiving the message in what he termed the worst storm and fog we had ever encountered in the South China Sea. By the time the landing force reached Da Nang, it was clear and windy, and the surf was pulsing between 5 and 10 feet, which are near nightmare proportions for an amphibious landing. Brigadier General Karsh had helicoptered ashore to confer with the Vietnamese I Corps commander when Captain Harvey J. Morgan, commanding officer of I Company, 3rd Battalion, 9th Marines, went on deck the USS Vancouver, another of the assault ships. From that point, Captain Morgan watched Navy frogmen lowered for a reconnaissance mission and return a few hours later with reports of sandbars newly formed, but not hazardous enough to prevent a landing. Captain Morgan, who is now a major serving at Marine Corps School's Officers Candidate Program, heaved a sigh of relief. During the landing, Captain Morgan's company encountered no difficulties because of the high surf. This was not always the case, however, as with other units.
Subsequent companies and staff members that landed in the amphibious boats like the landing craft medium and the landing craft personnel had difficulties with the surf and one landing craft medium, which is a pretty good size assault boat, broached on the beach and flipped over with probably 15 to 20 people in it. No one was hurt.
A few hours later, he was able to take his men, Company I, onto the right flank of Red Beach 2. As part of the first wave, I Company rode inside Amtraks, amphibious tractors which in heavy surf are luxurious compared to bobbing small boats, but still reminiscent of existence in a sardine can shooting the Niagara. Second Lieutenant Thompson was an artillery forward observer who hit Red Beach 2 at 10 a.m. on D-Day, about 2 hours behind the first waves of the landing. He also was not unaware of the surf conditions.
They were very high. They were the boat broached partway in. It hit a sandbar, and unfortunately one of the higher waves or part of the surf condition there, about a 7-footer hit the tail end of the boat, and it was just cocked at the wrong angle and just swung it around. And we were stuck on a sandbar for a couple of minutes till the power of the mic boat itself pulled it off. It was coming up over the gunwales of the boat and into inside the boat itself there. And on the shoreline, he had to have full power on all time to maintain control of the boat.
Although surf conditions did not seriously affect the success of the mission, it often caused a delay in the operation.
It took a little over 12 hours, about 13 hours for us to get our whole battery ashore. We had, we lost two mighty mites to the surf. They were offloaded in very deep water, and they overturned and sank to the bottom and had to be towed out by LVTs, and also one bulldozer towed one out. Had one howitzer that went in about a foot and a half over the top of the tube. Other than that, all of our equipment got ashore in operable condition. The surf caused a lot of the serialization of the waves to be delayed. Had to switch around certain articles that were found to be needed at a certain time in which the offloading couldn't be accomplished because of the surf conditions. Overall, though, the mission was not affected at all by it. It just delayed certain supplies and that were not necessary at the time.
Second Lieutenant Thompson, now Captain Thompson, aboard Marine Corps Schools, presently with the Long Range Study Panel, went on from the initial landing and became a forward observer with various infantry companies for the next 6 months in Vietnam. Throughout the day and night of March 8th, the 3rd Battalion 9th Marines and its support outfits came ashore near Da Nang, then immediately moved into position around the airfield. For some, the 10-mile trip from beach to airstrip was a memorable one. Corporal Anthony Bukowski, who is now with Schools Demonstration Troops here at Marine Corps Schools, was a shore party man during the landings.
We landed at the Da Nang Air Base and then took trucks to the beach where we stayed, pitched tents there, and communicated while the landing was in progress.
As such, he helped mark Red Beach 2 for small boat traffic, then operated a radio as boats poured mounds of logistics into the sand. The next day, after 24 hours without sleep, he also arrived at the airfield, sleepily amazed at the Vietnamese hospitality he'd seen.
When we were leaving the beach to go to the town, the spirit of the civilians, they were all happy, cheering, and the number of signs we came across over the road, there were signs everywhere welcoming us.
Gunnery Sergeant Wesley Allen was offloading a small boat at Da Nang early on the morning of the 9th. Luckily, the surf had subsided because Gunny Allen literally brought a ton of gear with him. He was disbursing chief for the 3rd Battalion 9th Marines and is now Quantico's assistant disbursing chief, and in addition to field safes and chests, had the pay record of every man attached to 3-9.
I got there about 4:30, 5 o'clock, and about 9 o'clock, I found this old tin building. I think it had been like a barn full of cows. No windows, no doors, dirt floor. Proceeded to set up dispersing so we could get in business.
Allen and his assistants established a dispersing office in a cow pasture adjoining the Da Nang airstrip. The 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines, arrived in Vietnam on an aerial merry-go-round. Huge turbojet Hercules transports round-robin from Fatima, Okinawa to Da Nang, spewing more than 1,000 Marines and hundreds of tons of combat gear into aprons of the airstrip. Sergeant John E. Paolini, who was in an artillery battery, was dwarfed by ammunition and supplies as the plane he was in approached Vietnam. Besides crew, there was only he and one other man aboard, so the pilot invited them into the cockpit to watch the landing. But that isn't what impressed Paolini most. He remembers the heat.
When we first got off the aircraft, I thought it was the heat coming off the engines of the aircraft, but it actually was normal temperature in Vietnam. I'd say that day it was around 100.
As the troops of 1-3 clambered off the transports, they immediately took up positions already occupied by 3-9, which moved into a hill mass west of the airstrip to provide perimeter security. Within a few days of the first wave landing, all of the initial increments of the 9th Marine Expeditionary Brigade were ashore and operating, allowing the buildup to become more massive. Two more battalions, another helicopter squadron, and a squadron of fighter attack jets reinforced the initial units before a month was gone. And of course, the buildup has gone on until present day. There were only a few hundred Marines at Da Nang before the 9th Marine Expeditionary Brigade landings. By the year's end, there were 38,500 Marines in Vietnam. Looking back on the landings, Captain Thompson attributes much of its success to the outstanding attitudes of the troops.
Morale was very high. It was extremely high. At the time, I had no experience at operating with troops under combat conditions. However, I look back on it, And I couldn't think of anybody that had a higher morale than these boys did. They would sit down, they might be sitting down on a beach or something, doing something not quite as important, and they'll see a boat or some equipment in trouble, and you didn't have to go up to them and tell them to get out, move out, and help these people. They were up doing this. You never had to tell them to do anything twice. They no rest for at least 36 hours, 48 hours. They just worked their heads off. Real fine. Excellent.
And it wasn't only the younger Marines who were impressed by the landing operation.
Well, being an old-timer, I was thinking back about back in 42, 3, and 4. But I was amazed, and I would like to go on record as saying that these young men today, they did just as good a job, if not a better job, than we did back in 42 and 43. I was really amazed and proud of them.
What followed the 9th Marine Expeditionary Brigade landing in Vietnam is heard daily in the news. More than 65,000 Marines of the 3rd Marine Amphibious Force are operating from four combat operating bases in present day. They are working with our allies, the Korean Marines of the 2nd Korean Marine Brigade, from some 5,000 in number and presently in force in the southern half of the Chulai Tactical Area of Responsibility. In addition, 10,000 naval personnel based in Da Nang and part of the naval activity are providing us with tremendous logistical backup and supply capability. 7,000 Air Force personnel are located at Da Nang Air Base and fly their fighters on strikes north and sharing the field with the Vietnamese Air Force and the 1st Marine Aircraft Wing. Since the Marines first came ashore in March of 1965 through December of 1966, 90 major operations of battalion size or larger have taken place. In small unit actions, the 3rd Marine Amphibious Force Marines have conducted over 90,000 patrols and over 56,000 ambushes. Support from the 1st Marine Aircraft Wing has accounted for 75,000 fixed-wing air sorties, and helicopters have flown over 540,000 sorties in support of both the 1st and 3rd Marine Divisions, the Korean Marine Brigade, and the Army of the Republic of Vietnam troops stationed in the 1st Corps area. In the Da Nang Tactical Area of Responsibility alone, over 3,000 VC guerrillas have been killed in the past year. An estimate of enemy strength in the 1st Corps area approximates 50,000. 30,000 of these are considered to be Main Force VC, or North Vietnamese units. The other 20,000, and this is an estimate, the VC guerrilla. There is much more to the war, however, than the tactical defeat of North Vietnamese elements. As Captain A.T. Stackpole, communications officer for the 3rd Marine Amphibious Force, explains,
as the destruction of the Viet Cong takes place, it's essential that the construction of a better way of life for the people of South Vietnam start. Marines, therefore, have become known as pacifiers because we've learned that to win this war, we not only must liberate the people, but we have to win their hearts and their trust.
A present-day look at the conflict in Vietnam shows the war being fought successfully on many different levels. The increase in Marine forces following the initial landings 2 years ago has been duplicated throughout the country. In January of 1965, there were about 23,000 American servicemen in Vietnam. 1 year later, we find 181,250, and it all began on Red Beach 2 on March 8, 1965, when the men of the 9th Marine Expeditionary Brigade fought dense fog and pounding surf to successfully accomplish the first American unit landing in Vietnam. This has been a special program commemorating the second anniversary of the first unit landing of American forces in Vietnam. It was produced by the Informational Services Office, Marine Corps Schools, Quantico. Your narrator, Marine Lance Corporal Tom Tamala. The preceding program was recorded for broadcast at this time. We'll be right back.